Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance, coming to you from the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown. What's up, Lance?
Tim, how are you?
I'm well.
Good. It feels good to be here, nestled in the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown, Massachusetts.
Always. And today we have this really fun conversation. I'm not going to call it an interview because it was much more of like a round table with Scott and Forrest from the very popular podcast Astonishing Legends.
Sort of the other side of the coin for us, right? We're the America's Most Wanted to their Unsolved Mysteries, I guess you'd say.
I think so. We kind of made that point in the episode. So if you like this podcast and like what we do, you may like Astonishing Legends as well, assuming you haven't heard of them. They talk about mysteries and really all kinds of things, but they do sway a little closer towards the paranormal than we do, that's for sure.
And one thing that we like about having a conversation with them is that there's not a lot that's off limits. We start on one topic and we just kind of let the conversation meander out there and simmer in the crock pot.
Open your mind when you listen to these guys. And these guys have really open minds. And what it is a mind-opening exercise that I love to be a part of. Love to be a part of the discussion and listening to it. Again, I don't even know if I believe in half the stuff we talk about, right?
The stuff like the Mothman and UFOs and aliens. I mean, these are things that are out there in theory, in people's heads. Like, you know, it's just this mystery that if it was solved, you'd probably be disappointed to know that you no longer have that mystery to look into anymore.
Right.
So it's a fun conversation.
It's a lot of fun. So we really highly recommend their podcast, Astonishing Legends. So please check it out today. Also, we just launched a Patreon page, Lance.
It's not only exciting, it's important. Go to the Patreon page. You'll see the video where we explain the tiers. You can subscribe anywhere from $1 a month to $20 a month, and we explain what you'll get with each one of those tiers.
Okay, everybody, so we hope you like the interview, conversation with Astonishing Legends, and go check them out. And subscribe to our Patreon page. Thank you very much. Welcome to Crawl Space, guys. We got Scott and Forrest from Astonishing Legends. How are you?
We're doing good.
Very well. Thank you for having us.
It's nice. It's really nice to be on your show as a guest instead of frantically preparing for our own show.
we're terrible guests of our own show.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear that we technically only have Scott on, so not to perpetuate any rumors, but the only image that we see on the screen right now is Scott.
Yeah.
And his mouth is conveniently covered by his pop filter, so I don't know if he's throwing his voice if another deeper one comes in.
There are a lot of people that think I'm the only one doing this show.
Well, you'll be especially mystified when we always talk over each other, so we've tried to curb that.
Wait. He's moving his lips right now, Lance.
See, it's a there you go. See, there's the gag. Wait, take a sip of take a drink. I'm an excellent ventriloquist.
This is great radio, well, guys.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's great for audio.
Yeah.
If you
yeah.
need a visual, it's as if it's that game you play when you stand in front of some or stand behind somebody and you put your arms through and you pretend to be their arms.
Right.
That's sort of what we're looking at right now.
Yeah. But
the audio version of that, which plays great with
audio version of that. Right.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot for joining us. This is going to be a real fun chat. We are big fans of your show, and you cover all kinds of topics, really. Some paranormal, some legend stuff. So I guess, how about you tell us what your podcast is first?
What, Forrest, do you want to do
that? Yeah, well, I mean, it started out of a mutual intense interest in just strange stories, and it could be anything. That's why we didn't really want to limit ourselves to just the paranormal or just ghost stories. Scott would bring up something. I mean, we're talking about years ago. Scott would say, like, hey, have you heard of dead water? Like, no, what is that? It's like, well, this phenomenon when you might be in an old sailing ship and you're not moving at all. The sails are full. You're not moving an inch. And it's just, you know, reported strange phenomenon. We'd check it out. We'd pass articles back and forth. you know, and then eventually over the years, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you know, we said we should talk about this on an audio format and a new thing called a podcast. So, yeah. I mean, podcasts have been around since I think early days, 2003, 2004, since they were doable. And we started, I think our first show was October 2014.
Yeah.
And we've been prepping for that for about a year and a half, just getting stuff in, you know, in order. Like, how's this show going to be? Should it just be the two of us with a moderator?
Yeah, we had lots and lots of meetings. And then eventually my wife, who is works in television and has done more, just an amazing career, she finally came to me and she goes, how long are you guys going to talk about this? When are you going to do something?
So, we're never going to do it because that's frightening.
Yeah.
It's just easier to talk about it. So, yeah, eventually we would always get the elements together because, you know, we have backgrounds in post-production as video editors and with a little bit of audio and, you know, and a little bit of, I would say show business. But, you know, we've both worked on productions for, you know, national media. So you realize, like, you better get a lot of that figured out first rather than stumbling out of the gate and then trying to do it as you go along. Now, that stumbling part was us getting used to talking in front of microphones, because that's a whole other trick.
Which you guys know, you know, and all the filler words. And I just started that sentence with you know, and all the filler words.
We're constantly trying to curb ourselves of bad habits and be cognizant of what the listener has to put up with us. And, you know, when we first started, we're interrupting each other a lot. And, you know, and that's natural conversation. So, but on the other hand, in an audio format, that can be annoying. So we have really kind of tried to refine that. So, yeah, over the years, really, it's a love of very strange stories, which run the gamut. It could be, you know, biographies, interesting people throughout history. It could be paranormal things. It could be, I'm trying to think of, you know, historical stuff. Scott and I both love the Old West. So it's just, we don't limit ourselves to that. But we also have to keep in mind, it's that, you know, we can't just start talking about scrapbooking. It's like, wait, what? It has to be kind of in a genre. And so we kind of term it as anything interesting or unusual that we want to talk about, we find interesting, and we hope the audience does too.
Yeah, and we do deep research on everything.
Yeah, that was organically a big mistake, because that started. No, it's just how we like to go about it. You know, we start getting into these rabbit holes, and then what you realize, like, oh, this is a 4-hour show, so now we have to break that up, and then so that kind of happened organically. That's just our nature. It was, you know, we like to dive deep into something and really know all the weird tidbits, because a lot of the times we had heard of a topic. And it's all the general stuff everybody knows anyway. It's like with Dyatlov Pass. Some hikers went missing in the Ural Mountains in Russia. It's very strange. They were found, very strange circumstances they were found in. Sounds kind of spooky. Is it a monster? Is it the KGB? Who knows? You know, so we know those elements. But everybody who's heard of that topic will probably know those anyway. So then we take it a step further and try and, you know, dig up stuff for people that's interesting, that maybe stuff that they hadn't heard of.
Right. I kind of feel like, now stop me if I'm going too far with this, anyone, but I kind of feel like we're like the bizarro versions of each other. And I have a few points here. We're both men, like late 30s, early 40s.
All three of us.
All three of us. you guys do more like a little bit more mysterious stuff, and we do a little bit more true crime stuff. So if you guys are unsolved mysteries, we're America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
You guys live on the West Coast. We live on the East Coast.
Yeah.
We're both with Audio Boom.
You guys are devastatingly handsome. We are not so much.
well Scott and I have faces made for radio.
Yeah.
The joke goes, but
yeah. We do long form things like you guys will produce a Mothman episode, which is like essentially 6 hours long, right, or 5 hours long, spread into 4 parts.
Yeah, it actually went to 5 parts, although we called the fourth and fifth ones 4A and 4B.
Yeah, that was a weird weird little blip in there.
That was tricky, you guys.
Yeah, so that was probably 5 or 6 hours. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we do the Missing Maura Murray podcast, which we've done 70 episodes for one case. So we're very familiar with the deep dives.
Yeah.
And you guys, you leave no stone unturned in your conversation. And I'm familiar with some of the mysteries you guys talk about. Mothman, I really love the Black Eyed Kids. And when hearing your episodes, like, you cover the things that I know and then some, but you always cover the things that I know about it, which is cool because it's like, oh, okay, so they're way beyond me. Like, I know that already going into it. So I think that's really fun.
Well, and that's the pressure that we always feel when we're producing, because we want to cover what everybody already thinks they know, and then we want to add to it. But there's no way to know what the people already know. Not to sound like Donald Rumsfeld,
right?
There's no way of knowing what we don't know.
But it's a valid point, I think. And there's so much stuff that we've left out, and we have
to pick and choose now because we have so much information.
Yeah.
We go through and we say, okay, we're going to put this in or not. But because we have a group of researchers, the Astonishing Research Corps, volunteers, and they come up with so much stuff. There's no way you could put it all into an episode.
Yeah, there are really interesting lines that they dig up that are directly related. But you know, you have to make that kind of a creative decision. A lot of times it's for time. We didn't have time to get to it. We got to produce something every week, you know, or at least 3 weeks on and 1 week off. And there's also the phenomenon of finding out something really interesting after you've already produced it. Like, oh, geez, if I'd known about that like a week ago, we'd have stuck that in.
Yeah.
But let me ask you guys, when it comes to doing a criminal case, does that ever happen to you? Do you have to leave stuff out? Do you find a tidbit? It's like, man, that's really fascinating, but maybe it's a lot of hearsay and it's not substantiated enough to really warrant this in if we're going to be respectful of this case. Does that ever happen?
It happens all the time. The worst is when it you thought you vetted something out and you have a guest on or you talk about it in a factual way and then you find out that you just overlooked an email or something, or you just overlooked a document, but you now know that, oh man, your voice is out there and that thing that you just said is resonating out there.
And there's a web sleuth out there for every incorrect right. fact that we mention. There is a web sleuth out there waiting to blow holes in it.
Don't we know that?
Yeah, we got those too. Right. We got those too.
Fact checkers. We call them fact checkers.
Yeah. I guess we're fortunate in that the R's are, it's harder to pin down the mistake because we're talking about things like the Mothman or, you know, the black shadow in the corner of your bedroom, but it's still, it definitely happens. It's hard not to make mistakes when you do deep dives.
Yeah. Right. And it's hard to, just to elaborate a little bit on that, when you have something that is a cold case, something that actually happened, it gets difficult sometimes to make the separation that you're not talking about a legend or
folklore.
Or something that is gone on through the annals of time, and you know, you can now have your own freedom of storytelling with it. These are facts that we now know that law enforcement looks at, and we have to be careful on that end too. We have to make sure that the community is well informed, and we also have to make sure we either do or don't put out information the law enforcement may or may not want.
But we love to correct our mistakes. So if we make a mistake in episode 54, we'll probably talk about it in episode 55 in the intro.
Yeah, we do that too.
As you guys do, which I really love.
Yeah.
I think that's what was really so listenable to when I'm listening to your podcast, and I think I sent the email saying that you're the first podcast other than ours that I listen to when I'm in the shower.
Mostly because
Tim's in there and he's just telling me about the podcast. that's cutting room floor stuff, guys.
Yeah, right.
But when I first heard you guys start talking, and then I read a review saying that you're like the click and clack of the paranormal podcasting community. Before I heard that, I heard you guys talking, and I thought this is what click and clack probably sounded like when they first started, when, you know, because they were around for 40 years or something?
Long time. Yeah, I don't even know how long, but decades for sure.
I mean, they were there before I was around, and, you know, and they're doing reruns.
Yeah.
Do they call them reruns?
Sure. Well,
yeah.
They
anyway.
Have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And but they have a backlog of hundreds and hundreds of episodes. But anyway, I can only I just imagine that that's what they sounded like when they were younger, just starting out.
Well, that's quite a compliment. Unfortunately we're not as young. We should have started this about 10 years ago. I think.
Well, the medium didn't exist, but we're famous for that. You know, launching kind of. Projects that just aren't ready for the world.
Yeah.
Or the world's not ready for it. So, yeah. You know, early on, Scott was really involved in this project that basically was, it was a kind of an early form of YouTube that, but it was based on people sending in video clips of interesting things in their area, and that would be shared on the internet. And you know, we had the technology at the time, you know, because I worked, again, in video post-production. So, you know, I had access to a video camera. I could edit the footage. You know, I was dubbing it off onto VHS and sending some stuff into Scott. So that was the early, early days where
VHS.
Yeah, exactly. Where the, you know, the internet was not so robust and there weren't all these services. And it was a little too soon because even when we had these video production backgrounds, it was tedious for us to do it. So people weren't, yeah. They weren't taping things on their phone and sending them in like they can now.
Yeah.
So, but the idea was there is that let's all, you know, people around the world even can share videos of fun things.
Yeah. We shopped that sucker. We had business plan and everything. And then the .com meltdown happened. And my joke was, well, we got through it without firing anybody or going out of business.
Yeah. Right.
Cause we never got into business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. You know,
such a glass half full guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had to be, I mean, it was, I honestly, we were so into it that it was one of those things for me that it had to be tried or I would have spent the rest of my life wondering if we would have done YouTube. It's like in it's like Jesse Eisenberg says in The Social Network when he's Zuckerberg. He's like, well, if you'd have invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook. Yeah. I didn't want to be that guy that didn't invent YouTube. So I know that didn't invent YouTube because it didn't work. We did try and it didn't work.
It was
me still sitting here and being like, God, we should have done that.
Well, the
man.
It, you know? I mean, it's the basic idea, though, that, you know, again, took off on its own. So, you know, if you get back to talking about like Click and Clack, what makes that work? Well, they're two brothers that really know their subject matter. They know cars up and down all day long. And they're brothers that rib each other in a good-natured way. And that's what people love hearing about. So I've had so many people, you know, when we talk about that in years past, like, I don't know anything about cars, but I love listening to those guys.
Yeah.
Because they're so much fun. They have fun teasing each other. They're joking around. You know, people do call in with their automotive problems, which they really know about. So you're getting that, but you're really listening to them having a good time. So it's like with you guys, it's like there's a good-natured sensibility there. You're very, you know, you have a very serious topic because, you know, unfortunately, it's about somebody who's missing, at least with your true crime episodes, and it's a criminal case. So there's some seriousness there.
Missing or murdered.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, but I think a lot of it is the rapport. And so you guys have, you know, you're really making strides towards that. It's developing, you know, it's people that people want to tune in regardless of the case. So, you know, yeah, hats off to you for that, you know.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice. Sure, sure.
Now that we both mutually established it, but these entities here have the... two of the best podcasts out there.
Yeah, you can, by the way, you can cut all of this.
Congrats to everyone.
Yeah, the Mutual Admiration Society is now in session.
Okay, let me ask a question here about Mothman. Now, so you guys did 4 or 5 episodes on Mothman, and I think it was at the end of episode 3, or maybe it was 2, but you brought up the real-life event of the Silver Bridge collapse.
Yes.
So 46 people died in the Silver Bridge collapse.
Yes.
So how do you guys balance that, you know, which is a little bit more fun, kind of talking about legendary stuff, kind of a little bit lighter, and then this real tragic event that this communities down in West Virginia and Ohio are still feeling today?
Well, I think that did it. The story itself did that because people themselves at the time made that connection. It was a year to the day of what was generally regarded as the first sightings. Now, that might you know, differ, you know, as you guys know, when you start really digging into a story, it's like, well, you know, the story that everybody goes to that ended up in the papers because it was two sets of teenage kids in cars that got buzzed by some weird flapping creature that kept up with them and chased them. And that, you know, they went to the police. They were totally scared. That got taken seriously. But a few days before that, there was a report of some construction workers, highway construction workers, I believe, in the area that saw something weird, some kind of brown flapping creature that shot straight up into the air. And that's a few days before. My point here is that it was pretty close to being exactly a year later that the bridge collapsed. So in people's natural thinking, it's like, are these connected? Was that an omen? Did this thing cause the tragedy? And so
yeah, there wasn't,
it unfolded that way naturally.
And you know, when you research that story in that case, there's not a whole lot of pushback that you read about or hear about from the local community of people saying, oh, this is a bunch of hogwash that has nothing to do with it. You don't hear that. Which you do in some cases, you'd be like, oh, come on. And I'm sure there's residents of Point Pleasant that are like, please, the Mothman, whatever, the bridge fell down. You know, that's definitely something that's happened. But with that particular one, you don't get a whole lot of pushback from people because I think everybody wonders if events were related. And also, as we pointed out in that series, the Mothman, which, you know, the movie that they made based on that was all around the Mothman, but that was only really about a quarter or a fifth of all the weird stuff that was happening. But yeah. But with regard to the personal trauma and everything, it is hard. You know, I've been to Point Pleasant, and the mark of that is definitely still felt on the town. It's a great tragedy. And I think that I think I unintentionally quoted the movie there.
Was it?
Then Indrid Cold goes, great tragedy. that's what my mind does sometimes. Accidental.
It goes right to a movie quote.
Yeah,
which is,
but yeah. It is horrible, you know, and it has, especially at Christmas, there was just so much strange stuff happening. And that one, honestly, in terms of a human toll, that's probably one of the worst stories we've ever told. Besides possibly the Henry Plummer, which was an Old West situation where there was vigilantes killing each other for years. But in terms of that kind of stuff,
most of our
stories don't involve something that that grim. And honestly, I would ask you guys, I don't know how I couldn't do true crime because I just with your most recent Cellar series. He had a TV show. It was about the Isle of Wight crime.
That's right.
Yeah, Randy Patrick.
Randy Patrick. Just that crime is just so horrific. And it's fascinating to listen to. But if I was producing it regularly like you guys are, I would need at least one therapist. Maybe
well, it gets into pretty dark territory. I think the way that we approach it always, and that's partly due to just our personal natures, is that we come at it very respectfully.
Yeah.
And so,
which you do too.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, because people aren't going to open up to you if they think you're just going to goof on them. And, you know, and I've heard this before in other true crime podcasts where, you know, initially everybody who approaches, who gets approached to be interviewed are like, well, I don't want to talk to you. I don't know what you're about. What's your angle? Are you trying to sensationalize this? You know, this happened to a family member. And so they're a little reticent to go on and talk about the details anyway. But what you'll find is, I think if they seem that you're respectful about it and can do something or want to help and share the story, then they open up. So when Scott talks about, you know, the pushback from anybody, especially who live around the towns of Gallipolis or Point Pleasant, the fact that we're not getting on there and doing, other big shows do that where, you know, especially if there's a few comics on there.
Yeah, we have shows, we have guests that we try to get on our show that won't come on because they've been lambasted on other shows. In fact, we had one specifically that we're having on this year because he wouldn't come on the show. Then he heard one of our series and was like, oh, you guys really covered it well. You've been very respectful, whatever. And now we're the only show that he'll agree to go on anymore, and he gets called weekly. So that it pays to be respectful, which I'm sure you guys learned the same thing because you're connected with. And our mutual friend Jordan over yes. at nighttime. It's the same thing. You've got to foster those relationships and have people respect you.
Yeah, I think even they don't expect you to believe them so much because they know a lot of these stories are so outrageously crazy with their details that, you know, a lot of times they don't believe what happened to themselves either. It's just they're trying to grapple with it. And sometimes they want to talk about it with somebody and share the story and they don't mind. It's so when you have them on, it's like, basically, the respect is let them tell their story. Don't paint them as wackos. Don't interject things. You may have your own opinions about, you know, what they're telling you, but I think to let them tell the story and then, you know, again, don't characterize them as something or you know, like, well, that's pretty wild, you know, wacky. I don't know what he was on. I don't know what he was smoking. That's what they don't want to hear because imagine yourself. That's why people don't, you know, I've always said this before. It's probably every other person you know, every third person you know has some weird paranormal story, something weird that happened to them, and you may never hear about it because they don't tell you because they're afraid that you're going to think they're crazy.
There's a high percentage of people that have stories that never tell anyone until they wait until they're... In fact, this brings me to my next point. We're not letting you guys talk at all, by the way. So,
that's
especially
point number
Forrest,
three.
Because he can't even see you. So if you want to talk, just raise your hand there and I'll give my hand signal to him.
There
and
you go.
You know,
all right.
What I was going to say is we talked a little bit about the curse of the man who sees UFOs, which you guys had mentioned.
I just want to, on an aside, Tim and I had a good laugh about that this morning because I said I literally just wanted to ask them if they saw the movie. And then it was like, oh, well, we'll watch it tonight and we'll research it. We'll totally vet it and we'll be ready to talk about it tomorrow. Like, no, I just really was curious.
And I'm on the emails and I'm like, I have not seen that movie and I cannot watch it tonight.
I'm pretty sure if I had said, hey, have you guys seen the Godfather trilogy and you hadn't?
Yeah.
You'd be like, nope, but we will take care of it tonight. We'll be ready to talk about it tomorrow.
Well, you know, it's funny. This is technically a dark week for us, you know, because we can only do so many in a row. And then we have weeks that are just, it's like all admin work and prepping for something. And so on a dark week, it's still like a 50-hour plus week of work, but we feel like we've gone to Tahiti. So it's like, hey, we have to watch a movie about UFOs. It's unrelated to anything we're doing right now. It's like, okay.
That was a fantastic diversion last night.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, that's a good point because you guys talked about like the weight of some of the topics that we cover and how we're able to deal with that. And really, it's by listening to shows like yours, Astonishing Legends,
and
it kind of lets you clear your head and kind of enjoy a mystery because we clearly love mysteries and it's enjoy this mystery and don't think about the real life aspects of the other stuff that we do.
Right, sure.
Right,
yeah, and we really try to keep it light in the office and things like that.
Right. You said you had a dark week this week. We have dark weeks every week.
well put.
Well, yes, they are in Nova Scotia.
That was a horrible
joke.
They're
in Massachusetts. Right?
Yeah, where are you guys located?
Yeah, you're in Boston, right?
Yeah, we're in Massachusetts. We're currently in Wormtown, about 45 miles from Boston.
Okay, gotcha. Wormtown is its real name, it is? Really?
No, it's Worcester, Mass.
Oh, that's Worcester. Does everyone call it Wormtown or just you guys?
We're going to let your research team look up why it's referred to as
okay.
Wormtown.
Very good.
There's a history there.
There could be that a giant worm once roamed the streets, but I'm not saying that that's...
Oh, nice. I like that. Or, that's good to know.
Did we? I feel like I cut you off when you were about to talk about the curse of the man who sees UFOs.
Oh no! I'm just gonna say for our audience members, either ours that are listening to this or yours, it's a really fascinating documentary. I really enjoyed it. I thought the character at the center of it was really amazing. I wanted to go hang out with him. He seems, as Forrest said, he's very punk and interesting. And I know you haven't seen it, Tim, but it's. It was really because everyone also wanted us to watch the Stan Romanek or Romanek, depending on how you want to say it. One which was what's that one called?
Extraordinary,
extraordinary, something like that.
Right.
And that one, the guy was having sightings, but then it just became clear he sort of devolved into making things up. I wound up really, really not liking him by the end. But this guy that's in The Curse, I thought he was really entertaining and interesting and. I think he was definitely had some confirmation bias about whatever he saw, but it did also seem like a good percentage of what he was seeing was remarkably unexplainable. Well, and I thought it was really entertaining, and it was well made too.
Right. Well, actually, with both of those documentaries, "Extraordinary: The Stan Romanek Story" and "The Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs," it's really about the person seeing them. It's not so much about UFOs. I mean, there's certainly tons of documentaries where they explore cases of just what are we seeing, what are these craft. But really, in cases like this, what's fascinating is the person at the center of it, because you know whether you believe Stan. Christos. Yes. Or if you believe Christos.
Just Christo.
Are you sure?
I don't think there's an S on the end. I think it's Christo because I'm sorry, thinking
yes,
like
yes,
the artist.
Right, Christo Ropolo.
Yeah.
Ropolo.
Ropolo.
It's about the kind of person that either is or claims to be plagued by these things all their life, and that kind of has defined them. And how does it affect you? What kind of, you know, what kind of person and comes forward with this? And I think what you see is that even if you don't believe either of them, they believe it so much that they're at the point where they have stopped caring so much about what other people think. And so that's kind of an extraordinary turn, you know, on a personality where it's like, you know what? I know I sound crazy to everybody, but it's something I can't deny anymore. And so go ahead and shoot, you know, go ahead and film me.
Right.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what you were saying when you approach an individual and you want to make sure that they know that you're not ridiculing them.
Right.
And that Christo from The Curse, it didn't matter that it was UFOs. It could have been Bigfoot. It could have been Mothman. It could have been the fact that he likes to, you know, whatever.
Okay.
That is what defined him so much. And then once you start finding out about him and you start feeling for him, Watch the movie a second time, and it's going to give you a whole, like, you'll start seeing all those
things.
Well,
I'll watch the movie the first time first.
Okay. start there.
The movie we weren't going to talk about.
Yeah. But my question is, you guys raise an interesting point, and I heard it kind of referenced in one of your Black Eyed Kids episodes. Is it the person who sees the UFO, or is it the UFO who sees the person? Like, in the Black Eyed Kids episodes, you said it's people who are aware of the Black Eyed Kids potentially, or will get the knock at their door.
Well, yeah. To clarify, you don't have to be, you don't have to have known about them for it to happen.
That's a little bit the folkloric part, but yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean,
but it has worked that way, right?
Yeah, it has worked that way.
If you're asking about, you know, of course, and if we said that just to make it spookier, whatever, it's like, once you know about them, they're going to show up. Yeah. So, well, you know, that's not an axiom. That doesn't mean they're always now going to show up. These things are very rare. First of all,
all paranormal events are rarer than you think. Even Skinwalker Ranch, which was like a hotbed of activity, they said it themselves in the book. You can sit out there for 5 months and nothing happens.
Right. And so it's that weird paradox where it is extremely rare for these things to happen. You know, when people write us and they say, now I'm freaked out, it's like, I wouldn't worry about it. It's extremely, you know, you'll get hit by a meteor or win the lottery before anything like that happens to you, most likely. But on the other hand, these things do happen with enough frequency that I think they should be paid attention to. So, you know, when you talk about whether that the phenomenon is drawn to you once you know about it, most people I think are caught unawares of it. And, you know, certainly Scott and I have always been interested in this, I think, from an early age, and really nothing extraordinary has happened to either of us.
Yeah.
Little small, strange things that just make you cock your head to the side. Like, what was that? But nothing that is a story, certainly. So, you know, and people, we've had some comments about, you know, demonic possession of, like, you know, fairly recently where, you know, people were saying, like, well, you know, because they're Catholic, you know, they're really into that. So they kind of brought that on, you know, or they're really into it. And really, it's only Catholic people that you know, get possessed. And it's only religious people that see ghosts because they believe in an afterlife. And it's like, well, no, I know that's logically what, you know, a place you get led to, but it's not. The people, you know, atheists and believers alike experience
Well, especially stories. In the case of the medical explanations for some of them, like Now I can't remember the name of it, but the woman that wrote Brain on Fire, the medical condition.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They, doesn't matter what religion you are, that can happen to you, and you're going to appear possessed to your family. Additionally, we have had guests on our show that will tell you and do believe firmly that people create their own reality. And so there is something to your question there, Tim, about that that's interesting. For me, and I know that you haven't seen it, but in Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs, one of the most amazing moments in it is this short little shot. It's like 5-10 seconds. They go away from it. They don't talk about it in great depth, but he goes out on his front yard and he sets his camera up with an infrared lens on it in broad daylight. And he's like, they're out here all the time. We're just not on the right spectrum. And sure enough, you look through and there's this huge slow-moving sphere moving across the sky in infrared in the daytime. Now, okay, I'm not there. I don't know if it's a lens flare, maybe it's a reflection off a jet that's somewhere else or whatever, but I was like, oh yeah, that this plays into the idea that this stuff is all around you. You just don't know how to see it.
Right. Well, the key, yeah, and I'll just interject here a little bit. The interesting thing about this documentary and this person, Christo, to begin with, is that it's the frequency of it. If you hang out with him for a day or two, he'll produce this weird phenomenon for you to see.
Yeah.
Because his neighbors have seen it. And you'll see that throughout the documentary. It's like, you know, even the guy, Justin Garr, who actually shot the documentary about Christo, you know, is shown something that he can't explain. He said, I don't know what it is, but I'll say it's not a plane, which is, I think, the name of his production company.
Not a plane.
Yeah, copyright 2016, yeah. Not a plane. You know,
there's a scene at the end that looks like the beginning of the closing scene to Close Encounters, with lots of little things dancing around
in formation, separating, changing patterns.
It's pretty crazy.
Right, and that is that shot in Close Encounters where they all come together and then fly off. That's kind of happening.
However, it's also easy to do in After Effects. But I don't think what Chris is doing.
Well, that's
doing.
What I'm saying.
Oh, they're trying to talk.
Yeah.
He can't see you. He has no idea. Okay. Every time I see their body language and they're like, and they're just like,
sorry. Yeah. No, I'm just going to wrap up the point here.
Okay.
Is that,
please do.
Yeah. Is that it happens with such frequency around this guy.
Yeah.
And there's something significant about that. And it's not dramatic. These are points of light that change color. They're oddly shaped. But it's not the saucer kind of whizzing by with round portals and large-headed guys waving at you. It's nothing that dramatic, but there's something to it. And so many other people have seen it, that, as you'll see in the documentary, that, you know, is, I think, to your question is like, like Rich Haddam, what we were talking about, is it just a psychic thing that's happening with this person and other people can't experience it? Well, I think there's a myriad of things going on. It's never one thing or the other. You can't pinpoint it. It might be something that every person on this planet has a different experience and connection to this weird phenomenon.
So you have to be careful with how many questions you ask us, because you're going to get 20 minutes on each one. So
yeah, well, no, we
might
want to
look at your list and just...
it's all good. Okay. Actually, when you said, and I'm going to do my best to phrase this and maybe wrangle this into another topic that we wanted to touch upon, uh-huh. When you said the frequency of, I thought you were going to say the frequency of him.
Oh.
And not the frequency in terms of like duration or amount of.
Oh, that's part of it too. Yeah.
That is part of it too, right? Like
their vibration,
an
individual's vibration?
The frequency that after a while the filmmaker starts going, you know, this guy actually might have something legit. His neighbors are like, no, I might have seen something. I'm thinking more of the power of influence, which goes to some of the stuff in everything in your stories are connected, but Mothman and Skinwalker, where the spaceship looks like something that you see in your kitchen because you're familiar with appliances. The spaceship kind of looks like an egg beater or something.
It shows you what you understand or what it thinks you will understand.
It's going to your frequency.
Yeah.
It's going, it has to try to meet your frequency. That's where I thought you were going with that. And that's something I would love to hear your thoughts on. Our interpretation of what we see and how we see it and when we see it.
Yeah, let me add on to that real quick because...
we need to fill another 45 minutes.
No, but in the Black Eyed Kids stories and in the episodes that you guys produced, a lot of people who tell their stories aren't sure whether or not the kids are actually talking to them or not.
Yeah.
Or if it's a telepathy conversation and they're reading their minds and it's going back and forth and no words are being spoken. So hopefully that adds on to your... Okay,
absolutely.
Okay.
Same thing with Indrid Cold and Alien.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into Indrid.
Wife Ingrid.
Indrid and Ingrid Cold. Well, it's a great couple.
Right,
she makes great casseroles.
No one's really sure. Yeah, that as far as that name, it goes back and forth on that. Mostly people settle on Indrid. But to your question, I think it's no one thing. It could be a thousand different things, because we always say, you know, you don't see with your eyes, you see with your brain. Your eyes take in the light, your brain has to interpret it. And, you know, I think we were talking about Woody Derenberger, who, you know, he's the one who saw that weird...
He saw Indrid.
Yeah, he saw him on the road, but they're flying in this giant, weird, old tin can lantern with a squeaky door. Is that really... Because the 2 points I'm going to make here is that what they're projecting onto Woody? Because they think, like, well, he'll get this. It's not going to freak him out, so, you know, he ends up catatonic. He'll understand this shape. Or is that what Woody's brain is interpreting? Because the real shape of it is this amorphous glowing blob that they're actually flying around in. But Woody's never seen anything like that, and he can't handle it. His brain's overloading. So is that his brain saying, like, okay, we're going to go with a lantern?
Well,
because we know what that is.
I mean, this is all speculative, of course. But then when you start getting into the idea of interdimensional beings and ultra-terrestrials and John Keel and all that kind of stuff, and you think about the Black Eyed Kids or any of the stories that we've told in terms of everything being connected, when what you're looking at is a long distance call from another dimension, you know, it's and the technology is not quite right.
You're saying all the rules are out the window.
Yeah. So it's just like, this is what you need to see right now. And I think in a way that's a totally hypothetical conjecture, but it fits when you think about it. It fits to nearly every story we've told in almost 100 episodes now.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't know who the original artist was that did this, but there's a piece of artwork, I guess, out there that is the Stephen King universe, and it's all of... have you seen this?
No.
Oh, Google this. The Stephen King universe, and it's all his characters, all his stories, and lines that go from each character to each story and town and monster, and how they're all connected somehow.
Yeah.
And when, as I'm listening to your show, I'm thinking about, you know, this universe...
Oh, and yeah, it, sure. I see this. Yeah,
right?
You
start saying, well, oh, he was the sheriff at this time, but, you know, his daughter went to school with this person from this book.
So then becomes the question is, does King have a chart of his own so he would make sure that they didn't run into problems like Star Wars where, you know, people are making out with their sister or whatever?
down the road.
I feel like he's working on that chart in, like, the edit. I don't think he's thinking about it consciously right up front. I think he's trying to figure it out before the book's published.
And he's probably thinking, like, well, fuck it. If someone's making out with their sister in my book, probably not the worst thing that happened in my book.
There are worse things. Yeah.
Somebody's going to pay for it. That's the, you know, Stephen, people are punished.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know, and most of his, you know, it's, he writes kind of what you know or what he knows, and he knows New England. That's what he, you know, it's Maine. So he's always going to have that kind of feel of a haunted small town. You know, you see these same themes running through where it's a, you know, the Ship of Fools scenario, and people, you know, the worst thing is not the creature, it's the people behaving, how the people behave towards each other in a crisis, when presented with something strange. So, you know, I mean, getting back to that idea of, like, what's really going on, how is this all connected? That's the one thing about the documentary curse, is that these don't look like the Tic Tac UFO that we just talked about in one of our recent episodes that just came out in the New York Times. That was
our
made
episode
a big splash.
Didn't come out in the New York Times.
No,
the story. The New York Times.
Yeah, the story of the right. You know, this fighter pilot David Fravor. Yeah, you know, a Navy jet pilot who'd seen something very strange, and it was recorded, and he comes out with a story, and he's a very credible witness. But that's real solid craft. The things that you know, Christo is seeing is like they're.
I think it's just Christo.
Christo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an American.
Christo.
Well,
he's from Ohio, but he's. he grew up watching Goulardi.
Yes, he did.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But no, the thing is that what he's seeing is, in my mind, is like, yeah, he's getting it. I believe he's actually getting something on video. But it's not what
I would think of as typical UFOs. It's some kind of other strange aerial. I mean, maybe they are craft, who knows, but it's a it's more phenomenon than they are, like, in my mind, as flying ships. So, yeah, obviously you can record stuff on video, and everybody has seen that, and the people, you know, his neighbors, and that's the another interesting thing about the documentary is that he goes up to people on a pier in Monterey. It's like, hey, you see that thing, that light bobbing up and down? Like, yeah, yeah, what is, we don't know what that is. Like, you see that, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, but they don't care. That's the thing. Well, coming back to your question, Tim, it's like, all these people are, that's a really good example of, like, they're there, they see it, but they're, you know, kind of on a first date, romantic, sitting at the wall.
You don't want to think about
it. Beach, yeah, like, oh, right. Yeah, that is weird. Then they walk away, they don't talk about it. Like, if everyone was as aware as the subject of the documentary, it'd be a different world.
Okay, so that just fast-tracks us right to a very important question, I think. What the hell is it, then? What are we talking about? Are UFOs, they're actually, would you guys believe they're extraterrestrial or interdimensional beings from some other dimension that maybe here as we speak right now, and we can't see them because they're in the seventh dimension, and we're only dealing with a few here.
We're just not advanced enough to see them.
Right.
Which, so, I like that. I like that idea. I don't like thinking that they can see us.
I mean, it's kind of them. Yeah. It's kind of blasphemy as true crime people to say, hey, we believe in UFOs or we believe in ghosts.
No. You might be witnessing a rare disagreement here. I'm going to say, being in the true crime genre, believing in UFOs, I mean, you have to believe in something that's scientific and mathematical. And if UFOs are anything, they are scientific and mathematical.
Well, yeah, I guess we should clarify UFO, because unidentified flying object could mean an airplane that someone sees and doesn't know is an airplane.
Yeah,
But yeah, we're talking about something from somewhere besides Earth or some other dimension that is here that we're not consciously
or just
aware
of. Under the water.
Right.
One thing that I've always thought was, from the paranormal world that is directly connected and influences true crime, is the psychic connection, which we see this all the time with people who they had a vision of a crime happening. Or some disaster as well. You know, so many people had premonitions of 9/11 happening, just weird gut feelings. They didn't get on a plane. This happens all the time. With crime, it's like, I saw a flash of somebody in trouble, or, you know, I mean, just listen, you know, we comment on Jim Harold's podcast all the time, and the Campfire series is all people calling in with their strange experiences, and you hear that all the time. It's like, you know, one of the most striking ones is, you know, my great aunt saw this figure pop up in the window, you know, and we both saw it, and it looked like this white head, and people like, well, that's an alien, you know, with black eye sockets. And this still creeps me out. It's she saw it, and what happened is that a few days later, she was murdered, but never not found for quite a while. And what the guy telling the story about, it wasn't his great aunt, it was the regular aunt, you know, that he was close to, is that her decomposed body looked exactly like what she described.
Stop it. And
weird stuff. Yeah, it's like weird stuff happens all the time. But anyway, that I would say that's more connected. If you're talking about UFOs and craft and what is it, and that's the big question, I think it's 1,000 different things that are, you know what I'm saying? It's unlimited. It's not just one craft that everyone's seeing made by, you know, space tech from the planet, from a different planet, and they're all sending them here. I think maybe that's one explanation out of 100.
I didn't say stop it in a way where I didn't believe it. I said stop it because that sort of terrified me.
No, I could tell. Yeah, that's it. That story is really scary. Jim Harold, you know, he has a podcast called Campfire. He has a lot of podcasts, but his Campfire one that does kind of ghost stories is a really good show. And there's a lot of creepy stuff on there, by the way.
To be clear, I don't think it's blasphemy, Lance, for us to say we believe in extraterrestrials or ghosts or something like that. Clearly, we actually said we believed in ghosts on one of our episodes in October, and we didn't get any shit for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually,
isn't that weird? We probably would get more shit if we said that we believed in extraterrestrials.
Oh,
you're probably
going to
get it for
bet.
This episode. I'm going to
probably, but I guess what I'm saying is, yes, like we're trying to use some scientific method to dismiss certain things, right? And that's what we do in our podcast.
Sure.
If there's an angle, like a theory or something, and then we kind of will talk it out ad nauseum, and eventually we'll dismiss some of these things. And I think it seems like Lance is approaching this interview with you guys too. We're not trying to dismiss these things that you're talking about. We're trying to learn more, because the way that you guys produce your episodes, we can't dismiss them.
Right.
I cannot sit here and say extraterrestrials are fake, or black eyed kids don't exist, or the Mothman didn't happen. How disrespectful would that be if I said that?
Well, there's a lot of people that say it.
Like, a lot of people will separate true crime and kind of paranormal or fun, like legend stuff, like what you guys cover. What we're saying is there's mutual overlap here.
Well, anytime you're dealing with death, especially a violent or sudden death or some other kind of life-threatening situation, you are close to what Forrest and I refer to as the thin place. You're on the edge of the veil of what we do and don't know, and there's more going on there than just fingerprints and evidence.
Well, yeah,
did you just say the thin place? You guys call the thin place?
Yeah, well, it's not just us.
That's an old Scottish term. Yeah, the thin place,
that's
I believe.
That's a great term.
Because you know, and you talk about, this is since ancient times, certain times of the year, Halloween, it's the thin place at the thin time when death is close.
Is thinnest.
Yes. Yeah, and so you're more likely to see weird stuff at the, at the solstice, whatever it is. But to your point about, what the goal is or how you feel about, when you listen to the podcast, that's all we ever wanted. We're not trying to press upon you any one theory that we may have uncovered. We're going to tell you what we think. But you're allowed to believe whatever. We just want to present, just the different stories. You can take away from it whatever you want. But you'll find that, if we do get some complaints on it, it's that people are like, well, that's crazy. This doesn't make any sense. That's BS. It's like, well, yeah, you're allowed to think that. But because where they get so riled up is that it's all personal. It all comes down to personal belief. And you'll find that, I'm sure in your stories where...
Or refusal to believe.
Or, yeah. And
out of fear a lot of times.
Right.
That's where
that
comes from.
Yeah. And we're not trying to tell you that, even though you may get that feeling. But it's also, it ties in with true crime. I remember, case in point, a car smashed into some cars out in front of my apartment. And middle of the night, you run out there, the guy's, I believe he was drunk, and he peels away, and I got a glimpse out the window. I was trying to wake up, and it's like, okay, it looks like a white car, maybe a Japanese brand. And then in the morning, as people were gathered out there, all the, people are coming out of their apartments. And I just remember this one guy, it's just like, that's my roommate. Is it? It's like, yeah, he, what kind of car was it? Like, oh, he drives a red Thunderbird. It's like, well, no, it wasn't a red Thunderbird. It's like, no, it is. No, it was that's him. He's a jerk. It's like, okay, well, wow. How do you know that? It's like, yeah, he's just real flake. He's a friend of a friend, and he owes us some rent. I'll bet it's that red Thunderbird. He was so convinced, even though I'm telling him, like, no, dude, it wasn't. I didn't get a look at the license plate, but I peeked out the window, and it's definitely a white car.
That guy does sound like a jerk, though.
Hey, you got to pay the rent.
The guy in the red Thunderbird?
Yeah. You got to pay the rent.
That it's like guy. A prerequisite to have a Thunderbird.
Cannot stand that guy.
But that was a cemented belief based on his experiences. Like, I don't like this guy, or I believe that he's this way. It's got to be him. So that happens, I'm sure, with witnesses, and yes, that's why eyewitness testimony is often faulty. But the point I make about tying this to the paranormal is that you may disagree on the color of the car. There was a car there. And it's like, did this thing have bat wings and fangs and glowing red eyes? Like, no, but this person says yes. This other person says no. They were kind of like butterfly wings. Whatever it was there, and it shot straight up into the sky. And now, 10 people
can
have
all
that.
Disagree about what it looked like, but it did something weird.
Yeah, something weird was seen. Something out of the ordinary was seen. Now, whether people agree on the details of that, people will
doesn't
use
mean
that.
That nothing was there. If
exactly.
There's a disagreement.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that point of taking it, and not believing it, it's like, well, you're allowed to believe whatever you want. We're not telling you that. And it's, and the same thing with a case, people have all kinds of theories. As you say, fact checkers, I'm sure will come up, and they've been studying it for a few years as an armchair detective.
and they have a theory and they're going with it. Well, we find the same things as well. People have, it could be the Mary Celeste. Like, no, I've been reading about this. I've read all the books. I've studied the inventory charts. It's a Kraken.
One of the few, we have a Facebook group, and it's gotten fairly big at this point, I guess. And then we've not really ever had to lock anybody out of there. A few people have gotten angry and quit. And when I say a few, I mean like two or three. We've blocked like two, I think, since we started it almost a year ago. I'm not even sure. Or maybe 8 months. I'm not sure. One of the people.
200.
Do what?
200.
200 what?
Oh, just two people.
Two people have been kicked out. It's running around, I think, 10,000 people now, or maybe 12. I'm not sure, but like that's what I'm saying. It's a low percentage of trolls. But the one of the people that we had to block was a very polite woman who completely deteriorated about something we said about the Mary Celeste and a bottle of ink on a table.
It was a bottle of the vial of oil.
Of oil on the table. And she was so angry about the fact that we said it was knocked over or it wasn't knocked over or something like that. But the evidence that we took came directly from a magistrate who boarded the ship when it was brought in for salvage and wrote down everything he was seeing as he saw it.
Guys, you need to get your sources a little bit.
Exactly. So
vet your sources a little bit.
Yeah,
more.
And she got so mad, we had to close her out of there. And I was just like, I felt bad because I kind of, but she was really reading us the Riot Act and telling us how wrong we were about some other things like the type of vessel, which we also knew. I mean, I used to sail. I know what a boat looks like. The difference between right. It was just anyway.
But that's people who get
he's not going to let you talk.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
He's trying to talk. Right
I can't
now.
See that. Doesn't matter. I'm just going to roll over. Yeah, I can't see anything. I don't know what's going on.
He's still trying to talk. No. Let Lance
all right.
Talk
go ahead. Please.
Go ahead. See, we should have had him on camera.
No,
too.
I was just going to extend the invite if you guys wanted to admin some of our social media.
Oh no, maybe, no, no,
no.
Oh, okay,
no.
I quit.
Okay.
I didn't know if you wanted more than two.
As a friend of mine, a good friend of my wife said when he was much younger, he worked at a Kentucky Fried Chicken, and they had a big meeting in the morning, and the manager came out and said, "All right, so we're going to have a salad bar." And he raised his hand and he said, "David." And my friend David goes, "I quit."
He's could be chopping tomatoes.
Now Forrest can talk.
Oh yeah, now Forrest, go ahead, talk.
Well, it depends on the case too, and I'm sure you guys, as you go through your true crime genre, there are some cases that, for whatever reason, have really captured the public's imagination, and we find cases like that. Tom and Should. The Somerton Man, there's a few people that, like, I mean, they've spent years on this personally, not getting paid, just as a hobby.
Oh, my God.
Combing through so much stuff.
I forgot.
There's another guy.
I'm supposed to send to Australia.
There you go. Yeah, well, put that on the list. I've got to write it. It's these cases that, well, that's the thing, too, is that these cases still follow you. If there's little updates or things, and of course, people write in. I'm sure you'll find that with open cases that are cold. People will, and that's the exciting part for you guys. Somebody writes in, like, "Hey, did you hear about this little piece of evidence that was overlooked?" That's what you're hoping for. So what we find is, there was a guy that he was, I wouldn't say jerky, but he was definitely trying to push buttons. And he said, like, "Well, the cigarette was on the other side of the lapel." Like, what? Okay, was that? That's not widely reported. I don't know where you got that. Does that matter? Does it solve the case? No, but thanks. But they, it's like, I have to tell you about this. I have this little piece of information. I must share this. You guys are wrong. I must let you know about this. And so we find that with a lot of the cases.
And that's
we'll
fine.
Cover.
And we'll take that heat as long as you're respectful and polite to us and not dismissive of us, of our guests. Sorry.
Right.
What, Lance?
Or download.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for the download.
Yeah, thanks for the...
But, quickly before I'm there, I want to ask you, have you guys had any... the cases you've covered, anything that really shocked you? I know you were kind of talking about that earlier, but something that somebody brought
today?
Up.
Today? Every week.
Every week. Every week.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just yesterday.
All the time.
We were talking to retired FBI agent Bobby Chacon. He's big on Twitter.
Yeah.
He loves the way Tim cooks his Blue Apron. But he within 2 sentences, he was making a point about one thing. Gives an example of this woman, and that was very disturbing. And then it finishes his point with something that was very disturbing.
Yeah.
And Tim and I are just like shaking our heads like, oh, Jesus, we don't know what to follow up on.
Yeah, it was very good. But as far as like new case information on Maura Murray, like he didn't necessarily provide that. That probably doesn't happen every week.
Right, yes. Just putting that out there. I did not mean new case information.
Right.
Maybe every month at this point on that case, there's something new. And a lot of that stuff we can't even broadcast, actually.
Yeah.
But we cover the Breonna Maitland case, too, and on Crawl Space. And that case, I would say the epiphanies are a little more frequent at this point.
Right.
And that is every week, I would say. Now, before I ask a question about the curse of the man who sees UFOs and then walk out of the studio.
Yeah. The topic that we weren't even.
You guys can go to lunch.
Yeah.
It's like in Spinal Tap did a special once where during the drum solo, one of them goes out and gets a haircut.
Now, I just want to ask a question about Indrid Cold. So the Mothman mystery began with this guy named Indrid, who appeared several times to several different people, sort of took a different form, even potentially gave a different name. That character is absolutely my favorite in all of supernatural lore, whatever you want to call it. I love that character. I love the story, and he terrifies the hell out of me, and I don't want to meet him. But My question, I guess, is a little more detailed. So he showed up saying that he was a searcher and he was meeting humans, and we're assuming he might not be human. I don't know. But he was this guy who had this otherworldly smile, like a smile pretty much bigger than was described as potentially bigger than a human can really smile. He showed up saying he was a searcher.
Yeah.
And like, was he looking for the Mothman?
That's something that we've talked about.
That's a theory that was kind of fun that we enjoyed banding about because it's. But here's the thing that's interesting about that whole case: they're not directly connected with the creature. Indrid Cold, it may or may not be directly connected to that creature that was flying around with the giant red eyes. And they may not be connected to the disaster of the bridge. There's, you know, it's like it's a flap of high strangeness, I think you could call it. Mm.
Yeah, so I guess that maybe that's why I'm kind of grouping them together, because there was this high concentration of strangeness in this one area in this one year, basically. Indrid Mothman shows up, and then the Silver Bridge collapses. Is there any chance that Mothman was not trying to scare humans, but actually trying to warn them about the Silver Bridge collapse, and Indrid is sort of like an intergalactic bounty hunter who's trying to prevent him from warning humans?
Oh, that's definitely the big, you just hit on the, I think the biggest feeling or we would say, like, it's not even a theory, it's not even a hypothesis perhaps, but the feeling that people got when seeing this weird cryptid creature, you know, it wasn't trying so much to attack people. It's just very awkwardly trying to communicate something, a great sadness. People, you know, they get this gut feeling.
Right.
And I get criticized and made fun of for going to that. But I always ask people who experience something weird, like, well, how'd you feel? It's like, well, I was terrified. Like, okay. Or I felt, you know, it was a ghost happening, but I felt really comforted, like it was an old relative's, you know. And I think that has a lot to do with that, because that goes beyond our limited communication skills verbally and even what we see, you know, that gut feeling that it runs the gamut. So, yeah, you just hit upon, I think, the most thought of theory is that it's some kind of communication with this weird beast that was maybe trying to warn them a year in advance.
Yeah, and I think with regard to Indrid and the idea of Indrid, you know, the weird thing about that is, if you could say that, you know, Woody Derenberger was the one who was having the primary interactions with Indrid, that continued with him coming out to his house, sometimes in a big black car, sometimes in a black Volkswagen Bug, sometimes reprimanding other strange beings.
Well, whatever Avis had at the time.
Yeah, ate his hat, stole his shoes, whatever. His shoes came back the next day. Woody was like, that won't happen again. So he's like this cosmic cop. But then You think, all right, well, Woody, maybe Woody's making this all up, but some of the details that he shared with him were received by another person that didn't know Woody in another city. Same kind of information came through, and it was a college kid.
Yeah, that's right, right.
And his roommates saw the story of Woody on TV and were like, come in here, man, he's saying the exact same stuff you said. And it's like, okay. That's the stuff we always look for. Forrest calls it the button, you know. But I mean, everybody calls it the button, but it's like, that's the thing where it's like, okay, well, this is all just this one guy and he's alone when everything happens. But then it's like, oh, wait, here's a dude in another state and he's saying the exact same stuff. That's when you're just like, what is happening there? And that's part of the, you know, the big questions about Indrid and who he was. And again, as Forrest said, you don't necessarily... It's very speculative to draw a direct connection between the collapse of the bridge and everything else that was going on. Those two events, I mean, you know, everyone knows, but the engineers will tell you that I-bar number 13
right.
broke yeah. or whatever, and the bridge collapsed as a result. It was poor design. It wasn't didn't have redundant strength capability, that sort of thing. Whether or not there's psychic energy around all of those deaths and the impending deaths, and we don't really understand what time is, but if we understood time better, maybe we would know that that thing was coming and it attracted the Mothman or whatever else was going on there. But it wasn't just the Mothman. It was the Mothman. It was UFOs. It was strange, you know, strange dwarves that went into the newspaper office. It was like all kinds of...
The flying bat creature that tried to go make off with a Bloodmobile.
Oh, yeah.
Or the had a skyhook claw on it, yeah. you know, something weird.
But the bridge really collapsed.
That's
the
right.
bridge was really built faulty.
Yep.
The bridge was going to collapse at some point.
Yes.
I think the mistake some people make is that these entities caused the bridge to collapse. All they were doing was trying to communicate that this was going to happen.
Right.
Right. There's two different things, right.
Yeah. Anytime we talk about this or we hear, you know, you guys talk about it, it feels like this, like, swirling whirlpool. And at the center of this whirlpool is this town, and all of these other things are coming in from the universe to try to tell them, you know, there's something bad happening, but they can't communicate with it because they pass through these, you know, different walls or these different, like, layers. And even the appearance of Indrid Cold... Indrid Cold is an indication of that. It's almost as if someone had said, or he looked at, you know, from a distance, looked at this whirlpool and saw these people and said, well, people seem to like it when other people smile, so I'm going to put the biggest smile on my face possible.
Well,
and I need to look normal. People wear suits.
It's kind of like, it's like if you saw The Fly, not the first one, but the Jeff Goldblum one, right?
Love that
one. Yeah.
Yep.
The Vincent Price one?
Brundle Fly. Yeah. the first one's great too, but I mean, when he first go, you know, the whole problem there is he gets mixed up with the fly, right? And so the idea, there is an idea, and again, this is all speculation, but our show is mostly about speculation.
It's all.
So. But if you could plausibly say, if you believe in John Keel's ultra-terrestrials or that interdimensional travel or interdimensional visitors, that Indrid and the Mothman are the same dude. And, or it's the same guy trying to send the message. He comes as a Mothman. He's like, wait, they're fleeing in terror. I'm going to come back.
I'm scaring the hell out of these guys.
I'm going to come back with a giant smile. You know, so there's all those different kind of ideas. And yeah. People will get into the whole argument about mass hysteria and all that sort of thing. But I can tell you, when you go to that town, even today, there is a palpable feeling that is still there. And it is.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's real. And it's really cool. I mean, I love it. It's a great place to visit. But like when you go into the diner and, you know, you sit down to get some good old fashioned, like, you know,
chicken fried steak.
Yeah. Chicken fried steak, whatever. And then like there's all these little tchotchkes on the wooden shelf over where they're cooking. And that standing up there is a little carved wooden Mothman. It's just so, like, it's just part of their existence. It's like...
Right. Now, do you think, this is one of my actual written questions, I don't think we've touched a single written question, but do you think that is something that they just do as a defense mechanism to diminish the seriousness of what's happened?
Well, there's certainly, I mean, there's an upside for Point Pleasant in the tourism that they get. They have a Mothman Festival every year, which is awesome. They have a museum there, which is awesome. People go every year, and that's all really cool. So it's useful to them to perpetuate all of that. But when you are there, and especially when you are around the older people, you can feel, there is there's nobody that's like, oh, that's all a bunch of hooey. You don't get that vibe anywhere. And I'm from North Carolina. You go home, go into some little town, there's some story about, everyone is eager to tell you how it's all a bunch of hooey. But this town is just, there's no denial. So
thank you guys for this chat. I would love to continue this at some point. Like, I feel like we easily could have went for like 6 hours.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. This could have kept going.
We did not scratch the surface of what, well, I wanted to talk about the dispatcher, but
I wanted to talk about sonic terrorism.
Yeah.
Can we do this again? I know that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you know, Tim just had his second child.
Oh, congratulations.
So there's scheduling, you know, so
yes,
if it's like you need to leave at 4:15,
yeah,
you need to leave at 4:15.
Yeah, got it.
So let's definitely continue this and make it into what is you know, the MO for both of our parties here, which is let's talk ad nauseum about these things for as many hours as possible,
right.
As many gigabytes as possible.
Yeah, I'm not done. I mean, we got more.
Yeah,
we will be seeing you in time.
See you in time.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.